This is Andy Smith. I'm at the Providence Journal. And we have you coming to perform here in a week or two. Can you tell me a little bit about what you're going to be doing for us on stage?
Well, I get up and talk. Talk a little bit about being 75, which is a humorous point in one's life, at least it is for me. Most of the people in the audience are a good deal younger than that, and so they look on this with some amazement. and that's always nice to have a head start on the audience. I don't talk about politics at all. I people hear a lot about that everywhere else, so I skip that whole very rich field, and I try to get back into my childhood in a small town in Minnesota as quickly as I can. I do want to talk about my interesting grandchildren and talk about how lucky I've been to have gotten this far, but mostly I want to get back and into that town which people know, and talk about the mixture of people, the old fundamentalist Lutherans and the exotic Catholics and the dairy farmers and the bachelor farmers and the amazing teachers who required us to memorize poetry. And I also like, if the audience is in the mood, I also like to get them to sing. I sometimes walk into the crowd, if that's possible, and they stand, and we just sing little bits of standard American songs, from My Country 'Tis of Thee to Sweet Chariot to the Battle Hymn of the Republic to Can't Help Falling in Love with You, whatever comes to mind, Oh Susanna, and Frankie and Johnny. And they all know the words. This is amazing to me, and it's even more amazing to them, to stand and sing a cappella and very, very beautifully. And people are moved by this. It really is kind of a phenomenon in certain parts of the Midwest. You know, we might sing old Protestant hymns or a verse or a chorus, and to stand close to strangers and sing in two or three or four part harmony all of these songs is people dab at their eyes. I think they realize that this will not be possible 25 years from now, and that an audience that you put together, no matter where you go, will not all know the same songs.
Interesting.
This is something that belongs to the early part of the 20th century, and it's getting farther and farther away.
Right. Now, the town you're talking about, that would be Lake Wobegon?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Cool. All right. Now, I spoke to you a couple of years ago, and this was just before you had left or had retired from Prairie Home Companion. Do you miss the show at all? Do you still listen to it?
I don't listen to it. I make a point of not listening to it. For one thing, I'm usually working on Saturdays.
Right.
But beyond that, I chose Chris Thiele for good reasons, and having chosen him, I want to leave him free to make his own show and do what he needs to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want him to wonder what I think of it, or God forbid, call me up and ask me what I think of it.
Right.
And in order to give him that freedom, it's important that I not listen to it, so I don't.
Right. Okay.
I know people who do, and they are generally enthusiastic about it, but I don't. I don't pay any attention to it.
Ah. Okay.
Your successor, your predecessor, is supposed to disappear. This happens in churches when they get a new pastor. The old guy is not supposed to show up at church, you know, and listen to the sermon. That just is terribly rude. You're supposed to go as far away as you can.
Right, okay. Are you enjoying your life post Prairie Home?
I love my life. Mm-hmm. I was lucky in romance, and so I've been living with the same woman, married to the same woman for 20-some years, and that's, you know, a piece of great good luck. Mm-hmm. And I love my work. I get up every morning, she sleeps later, and I get up every morning and I make coffee and I go sit down at a laptop computer and I pull up whatever I'm working on. I write a weekly newspaper column and I adore doing that. 750 words due every Tuesday morning. It's one of the high points of my life, working on that. I'm working on a couple of books, and I have a Lake Wobegon screenplay underway, so I have plenty of work that other people are waiting for me to finish, and to me, that's complete happiness. I don't need anything else.
That's excellent. Yeah, I read some of your columns in the Washington Post. They're interesting. You seem to cover a very wide range of topics. And there, of course, you do talk about politics.
Now and then I do. Mm-hmm. I did more back during the election, and a little bit more in January, February. But I've left it alone for a while. I did a parody of Trump's tweets.
I saw that, yeah.
In a column last week, and I got a flood of complaints from Trump supporters who did not recognize that I was imitating their man. But I don't live in Washington, and so it's not a, you know, it's not a big compulsion for me.
Right, right. Now I know that the last time I spoke to you, you said you were working on a screenplay. For mm-hmm. Lake Wobegon, and a couple of books, a novel and a memoir. Are you still planning to do those? How are those coming?
The novel has disappeared, and I'm working on a collection of limericks.
Really?
I've been writing limericks all of my life, and always trying to write a dirty limerick, and I've written a few good ones, but mostly the limericks of friendship and satire. And I'm still working on a screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on my fifth or sixth revision, and I still enjoy it. It's changed 180 degrees from when I started out, but that's fine. And it's gotten shorter.
Ah, that's probably good.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. You know, I don't believe I've ever heard a clean limerick. The only limericks I know are dirty. The form seems...
Oh, really?
Yes, the form seems to... Maybe I'm wrong. The form seems to lend itself to dirt, and I don't quite know why.
It does. It does, because the fifth line is, you know, can be a complete surprise. But I mean, I've written some that was semi-vulgar, anyway. A young fellow from Pocatello said, "Why is my urine bright yellow? Was it something I ate? Or could it be Kate, whom I dated on Saturday? Hello."
And, that's not bad.
You know, I mean, it's a fairly innocent limerick, suggestive, not, you know, like the young man from Madras, you know, whose balls were made out of brass. That's one I did not write, and but I would have been proud to had I done it.
Right. Most lyrics I know seem to involve someone from Nantucket, and I don't even have to tell you the rest.
Right. No. But, you know, you're up there near Nantucket. So,
we are.
And I think there's one clean version of the old man from Nantucket. Nan was his daughter, and he was missing something, and then he discovered that Nantucket.
Ah, okay.
That was not as good as the one you were thinking of.
Right, no.
No, I've written a lot of limericks for friends, limericks for my daughter. I specialize in writing long-form limericks, sextuple. I once wrote a 26-limerick history of American authors, in which I wrote one on Thoreau. The great transcendental Thoreau wrote luminous prose long ago. No, that's not it. It'll come back to me.
All right. A couple things now. Are you still writing the Writer's Almanac for that's a podcast?
Yes.
Right?
Okay. Yeah. I still do that. I record them a week at a time, and they're carried on public radio. The only 5-minute show in radio, I believe, except maybe for newscasts on rock and roll stations.
Right, right. Now, are those all the ones I've seen are all news from Lake Wobegon? Is that what they all are, or are there other things involved?
Which is that, the Writer's Almanac?
Right.
No. The Writer's Almanac is this day in history.
Oh, right. Okay.
And then there's a poem at the end, not a poem by me, but by somebody else.
Right. Okay. Interesting. And do you still own the bookstore? I know you owned a bookstore at one time.
Yes, it's been in business now for I think 15 years, and it lost money steadily for about the first 10 years, and then I've got a really good manager, and now it's in the black, which is a great feat.
It is a great feat.
It helped when Barnes & Noble closed a couple of stores in St. Paul, but I think good management has more to do with it.
Nice. That's nice. I mean, I have a friend who owned a bookstore in Maine. He had to shut it down because, you know, bookstores are in trouble. And then he took like 20,000 books and he built a bookstore in his house. And he sells online. Uh-huh. He sells online and he sells to dealers. But to me, it's like a dream come true. He can walk down a hallway and he's in his own bookstore.
Well, good for him.
Yeah. Yeah. Now when you perform on this tour, are you by yourself, or do you have a band with you, or other people?
I'm by myself for the one in Providence. Sometimes I have a piano player, Rich Dorsey, come, and sometimes Heather Massey comes down out of the Catskills and sings some duets with me for old time's sake. But I'm perfectly happy being by myself, just a microphone and a stool and some people in the seats.
Nice. Okay. Well, that's great. So you tell stories, and when you get people to sing, are they usually pretty willing? I mean, do you ever run into people who tell you no, or they don't know the song?
People who don't know songs?
Yeah.
Well, then they just move their lips. They don't
right.
They don't try to sing.
Mm-hmm.
No, but audiences make beautiful choirs. They're in the dark. Nobody can see them. And nobody is distracting them by waving his hand at them.
Mm-hmm.
And we just sing. We just stand and we sing. We sing Battle Hymn of the Republic. And sometimes we sing two verses and sometimes three and four. And people know them all. It's quite amazing.
It is amazing. It is amazing. Mm-hmm. All right. Now, you had mentioned your... talking a lot about being 75 and finding some humor in that. I'm 66. I don't know if I'm ready to find humor in another 9 years, but we'll see. It'll find me.
You'll find it enough.
Okay. So do you talk about ailments and or do you talk about gaining wisdom? What do you find being attractive about being 75?
I find attractive the fact that ambition is completely gone. I wanted, when I was in my early 20s, to be a great writer, and I no longer care. Mm-hmm. I love scribbling. That's what writing a column is. You're sitting and scribbling. You're writing for the pleasure of it. And your ego has shrunk to the size of a dried pea. It just is no longer a big problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you march through your 20s and 30s and into your 40s, and you're lusting after fame and major awards and good reviews, and then you come to a point where you simply are having fun doing what you've been doing all of your life, and it's an amazing transformation.
Mm-hmm. Interesting, because I know some columnists who have egos the size of the Hindenburg.
Ah, well, I guess I have not met those.
Right.
Those columnists.
Right. Okay. Now your voice is very distinctive, and it's sort of how you make your living, or part of your living. Do you do anything to keep it supple and sounding good? Do you do vocal exercises or gargle honey, anything like that?
No, I never knew how to do those. I had actors on the show who always warmed up, and they made these strange sort of bird-like sounds in their dressing rooms and trills and squeaks and squeals and... I never knew how to do that. No, I do nothing whatsoever.
Okay.
It just is there. I mean, I quit smoking, you know, back in 1982, I think it was. And I quit alcohol back in about 2005, I believe. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, neither of those are particularly difficult to do, and I'm sure they helped.
Right, right. Yeah, you sound great. Now you did talk. Your schedule seems pretty full, and you do mention being 75. Do you see yourself slowing down at all, or cutting back on, for example, the live touring?
Eventually, one has to, of course. Mm-hmm. But you know, I haven't seen the need to, as yet.
Oh, you were talking about the possibility of cutting back on your live touring, at least.
Well, I love my work, and I can't quite imagine what life would be like without it. I mean, that's, I guess, what would happen if I slowed down. I wouldn't be writing. I mean, I thought about it back when I had an eye operation, and suddenly I was rather blurry,
mm-hmm.
and I started to contemplate what would life be without, you know, without writing, without reading, and it was a terrifying thought. I kept writing. I just, you know, sat with my eyes about 3 inches away from the screen, and because I couldn't imagine the alternative. I mean, I love to sit with my friends and family and, you know, sit and talk, and I have rather limited interest in travel.
Mm-hmm.
I would go someplace to see people, but I'm not interested in seeing foreign places or being the foreigner, you know, in other places. And so it's a puzzle to me what would happen. You know, I had a stroke about, how long ago was it? I think it was about 9 years ago, and but it didn't hit anything crucial.
Mm-hmm.
And but it's kind of a wake up call, you know.
Right.
You look at an MRI picture of your brain, and you see these two dark dots where blood clots were fired by your heart, you know, up into this mass of brain material, and the neurologist is there to tell you exactly how lucky you are. There are people younger than yourself who are walking around with a walker, you know, because their blood clots landed elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So you keep going forward and don't brood about mortality.
Right, right. All right. Well, Garrison, I can't think of anything else. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Anything I need to know or that you're working on that I didn't get to?
You need to know that an ancestor of mine, one ancestor that my family is particularly proud of, was a Rhode Islander.
Oh, really?
He was a friend of Roger Williams, and he came over from England. He was a Baptist. Elder John Crandall, he was from Waverly. And I keep meaning to go visit Waverly. There's a museum there about him. He went up to Massachusetts to preach, and he was arrested by the Puritans back in colonial days for preaching tolerance of those who disagree with us on doctrine and preaching benevolent treatment of the Indians.
Huh.
And we are unreasonably proud of Elder John. His people moved to Canada to escape the revolution, and then they married a Keeler, and so we hang on to that.
Right. Okay.
So it's a trophy.
Nice. Crandallo.
That's correct.
Right. Okay. All right. I'll check him out. That's interesting. Well, maybe while you're here, you can. Is he buried up there?
Yes.
Ah, okay. Maybe you can check out his grave.
All right.
All right. All right. Well, Garrison, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
All righty. Bye now.
Bye-bye.